This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that sin. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to the Speakeasy. I'm Souther Teague.
And I'm Greg Benson.
Greg, where the hell is Harold?
He's back. He is back at home where he's supposed to be.
Talk to us about Harold. That's the story of the day.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, it was. I'm glad that I'm here in the recording studio today because there was a chance that I wasn't going to be. There was a chance I was going to be combing through the woods of rural Pennsylvania looking for a missing service dog. So to back up, my sister has really, really bad celiac disease, like to the point where we were at a Thanksgiving one time where someone touched a bagel, touched the spoon that we were all eating from in the salad bowl. She used said spoon to put salad on her plate and was sick for like a week. Like she's got it really, really bad. So about 5 years ago, because she's a veterinarian, and because she's just a very good problem solver, she found a woman who trains allergy detection dogs. They're comparatively rare, but what this process is essentially is because dogs' noses are so sensitive, you can train them to smell peanuts, you can train them to smell shellfish, you can train them to smell pretty much anything, including gluten, which apparently I know way more about this now than when I first started on this journey of bartending about 15 years ago now. But, you know, gluten is apparently a very big, heavy molecule. So it's difficult even for, you know, scientific devices to tell if something really doesn't have anything in it. The FDA allows stuff to be sold as gluten-free if it has 10 parts per million of less of gluten. This dog can detect down to one part per million. And also he is just a board certified good boy, like a
Harold.
Really solid, awesome, friendly, crazy dog. And he, because it was a really windy day in Pennsylvania yesterday, my sister's front door blew open. He got out, he ran all over town. And then later on last night, I guess, decided it was time to come home and was able to find his way back from like 5 miles away. So he is safe and sound, and I didn't have to get up at like 5 a.m. to catch a train out there to comb through the woods all day, and everybody's happy. But yeah, it's a happy ending to a very stressful day yesterday.
Right. I mean, you know, stressful enough to lose your beloved pet who she's had for some years now, but also this pet is somewhat integral to her health and safety, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's one of these things where, you know, before she had this dog, it was a real roll of the dice, you know, it's been interesting for me to watch this process because I up until March, sold food and drinks to people for a living. And, you know, you have to be very, very cautious about allergies, about stuff that people can and can't eat, because for some people, you know, for me, a piece of toast is a piece of toast. For people like my sister, it's poisonous. And it's been really interesting to watch how this dog can detect even like the tiniest, tiniest bit of gluten on everything that she gets at a restaurant, everything that she buys at the supermarket, basically everything that she had that she's put into her body for the past like 5 years, this dog has passed it. And I think it's amazing to watch. I have videos and I think we can put them on the Speakeasy Instagram, but it's really fun. What she'll do is she'll take whatever she's holding, you know, a can or a box or whatever, hold it out to him, and she gives him the command to check it, and he'll smell it. And if there's gluten in it, he'll spin around in a little circle. And if there isn't and it's safe to eat, he'll back up and sit down. And it's just been so awesome to see, you know, the fact that there is this option out there to open a whole world up for people like my sister and people that my sister has later talked to about getting allergen detection dogs to make restaurants a safe place for them and not this sort of, you know, dangerous crapshoot of whether or not you're going to go there and get horribly sick afterwards. It's right. Awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty incredible. I'd heard of dogs being allergen detectors, but I've never seen one. And I certainly didn't know that they could smell down to one part per million. That's pretty incredible, frankly.
Oh, it really is. And it's, and like I said, it's like, you know, there are, we can build machines that do this, but they're not nearly as accurate as these animals that have just been living alongside human beings for millennia. Yeah. And it's also just, this is a positive story and I don't want to take it in a negative direction, but I also do have to say that it's made me much more finely attuned to people that walk in with service animal vests on, like, you know, their purse dogs or whatever. And it's one of these things where, you know, I mean, my sister isn't, you know, blind. She isn't, you know, at a visible disadvantage to a stranger. Let's put it that way.
Right.
And she still gets a lot of scrutiny for, like, oh man, like, do you really need this dog? And yeah, she does. She absolutely does.
I think that rests on the shoulders of the bad actors out there who've gone through hurdles and hoops and pains to get their dog certified as a dog that they need to have with them in some sort of service, but don't actually. And I frankly know a couple of those people, and it somewhat infuriates me, frankly, because those bad actors make it worse for everyone, you know.
Absolutely, you and me both. But yeah. But yes, but ultimately, it's a positive story. Harold the dog is back. It's just such a, like, you know, it's an amazing testament to the fact that they are incredibly smart animals, but they're still animals. You know, it's like he was able to find his way back home from 5 miles out in the woods. That's amazing. He ran 5 miles out into the woods in the first place. That's an infuriating thing. Like, I would never do that, but also in the dark, not knowing where I was, there would be no way in hell that I could just find my way back by, like, scent and memory.
Right. Well, everybody's elated that Harold is fine and that your sister can now continue to be, you know, cared for and safe by his dutiful service. But let's get into our show. Let's get into our thing.
Let's absolutely do that.
Yeah. Who do you got in the virtual studio with us today, Greg?
Today in the virtual studio, coming to us from sunny Santa Fe, New Mexico, we have Natalie Bovis of the Liquid Muse and Organic Mixology. So, Natalie, thanks so much for tuning in with us today. It's great to have you.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. I was so fascinated by that story you just told about your sister's dog, and I'm such an animal lover that, like, hit me on so many levels. That was amazing.
Right? You know, a little sunshine story in this typically gloomy era. Yeah, that's nice. Harold does a good job. I like that you certified him as a good boy. That's good to know as well.
Oh, yes. He's got the papers to prove it.
Natalie, let's talk a little bit about your past first, and then we'll get, of course, to your present. Greg mentioned, of course, Liquid Muse as well as Organic Mixology. Let's talk about the Liquid Muse. Been around since 2006. What does Liquid Muse offer to our sector?
Well, you know, it's evolved over the years. I worked in hospitality since I was 15 back in the 80s in one form or another, as a busser, a host, a server, a cocktail waitress, a performer. Like, I've done it all. I even did singing telegrams for a while back in my LA back in my LA days, and I catered, like, forever. But the Liquid Muse was hatched out of an idea I had back in the mid-2000s. I was working in Washington, D.C. as a restaurant publicist. It was like my day job while I was also trying to do all my acting and all my other writing and, you know, fun things. And the bartenders there, this is back 2004-ish, so like Derek, Brown and Jane Gershavani were working in some of the accounts I was doing PR for. And, you know, folks like them were making these amazing cocktails. And I got so excited about it. You know, blogging was kind of a newish thing then. So by 2006, I quit my PR job and just started blogging full time about mixology. And what was kind of interesting about it, which I wasn't consciously aware of, but I was one of the only, you know, females blogging about cocktails at that time. And so I unwittingly kind of opened up some opportunities for myself. I can't say I was clever enough to have planned it that way. I was just super interested in this mixology thing. And my blog got a following. I started getting written up, Marie Claire, and like all these like random big folks like mentioned it. And then that led into liquor companies kind of reaching out to me and saying, hey, we already know, this is mid-2000s, you know, we already know that women buy most of the wine. We want these women to buy spirits and make cocktails. You're a female voice in the space, like telling people about great cocktails and how to make them. And because at the time I was kind of learning myself, you know, really about mixology. And they're like, you know, can we pay you to talk to women about cocktails? And I was like, heck yeah. So that's how it began.
I mean, that's a great origin story for a thing, and it stood the test of time. It still exists, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't really blog so much because nowadays blogging is just working your butt off for free, and no one really reads blogs that much anymore. You know, it's more about the podcast. And you know, I have written a few cocktail books since then and whatnot, but I'm not so much blogging now. But now I do other stuff, which I can tell you about if you're interested in that stuff.
Well, I mean, I know you do, just looking at your website, you do events and marketing, you do classes and training, you do consulting and trend watch. I'm not exactly sure what that is, but I see that blogging is underneath that section. And I think it's, pretty fortunate that you decided to make that leap and just blog full time at that particular time. As you said, being especially maybe one of the few women, I kind of remember at that time, it was like Sweet Blog of Mine was around as well, right? Lauren Spryer, another woman, but like you're right, not a lot of, I can think of like, you know, Morgenthaler was around, and even Boudreaux mm-hmm. was around. I can think of dudes, mm-hmm. You know, Drink Boy,
yeah.
but I don't really yeah. recall thinking like, oh right, another woman. So like yeah. you were just somewhat right place, right time, but also just, you know, you got picked up and that's great.
Yeah, well, you know, I was able to put those PR skills to use, I guess, and just say,
right.
Hey, guys, hey, world, I have a blog about cocktails and people are interested in that now. Want to read it? You know, so it kind of happened like that. But yeah, I mean, what happened over the years after that was, you know, once these liquor companies started kind of reaching out and being like, hey, I saw you write a cocktail article for Rachel Ray's magazine. So we want to hire you to talk, you know, talk like Rachel Ray or our, you know, potential customers out there. So I became a spokesperson. At that time, I wasn't called a brand ambassador. Right. And it wasn't really the same function as a brand ambassador as we know it today. But like, for example, another weird like twist that happened. Again, like I wasn't really so clever to plan all the lucky twists I had. But I had gotten married around that time and was hoping to start a family around that time. And so, and lots of my other girlfriends were getting married and having kids. And I was like their cocktail friend. So they'd asked me to make mocktails for their baby showers. So my first book, Pregatini's Mixology for the Mom-to-Be, came out in 2008.
Amazing.
Well, but you know the crazy thing? But here's another weird, like, lucky thing I didn't plan. So I wrote this Pregatini's because I'm like, oh, my friends all want to have this, you know, a book like this. You know, I've written three cocktail books. The other two I was, you know, thought, oh, these are my great liquor books. No, Pregatini's is the only one still in print of the three and the one that I actually get residuals from.
I mean,
with a title like that, though.
Every day someone's finding out that they're pregnant, and also I think every year over year, and it's even harder this year, non-alcoholic and mocktails, whatever you want to call them, are becoming more and more of a recognized category. I just posted out on my social media about, I said, there are several vegan butcher shops here in New York City. There's a dairy-free cheese shop in the Essex Market, and just opened in Hell Square on Ludlow in the Lower East Side is a completely non-alcoholic bottle shop. So it just seemed inevitable, right?
That's so cool. Yeah,
I can see why that place that book has legs.
Well, and I love I've seen some of the stuff that you've done, Souther, about the non-alcoholic stuff too, and you've posted about on social media. And I think it's really great when we have, you know, bartenders, respected bartenders such as yourselves, you know, also talking about health and wellness and talking about, you know, physical and emotional health and talking about mocktails as well as cocktails. I think that the one thing I've been really excited to see over the last, you know, 15 years or so that I've been in the game is, you know, more of a focus on balance. I hope we talk about all, you know, that topic a little bit more, because that's super important to me. And I know that it is to you guys as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, actually, that seems like a pretty appropriate spot maybe for us to take a break. We can come back and keep talking to Natalie Bubbs, who's got such a compiled amount of different experiences in her life that have all led to the place that she's at, you know, an actor, an entertainer, a marketing person, a person who's rounded the bases in every part of the restaurant and bar. And that's what brought you to Liquid Muse. And now we're going to come back and keep talking with you about organic mixology and where you're going from here. So stay tuned to the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2-Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
And we're back. You were listening to The Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. Today we're talking with Natalie Bovis of a lot of different things. Natalie, we were just talking about all the stuff that you had done that led you to where you are now. And we were talking a little bit about your blog, Liquid Muse, and how it was really trailblazing because you were one of the first women in that space. And now you have a company called Organic Mixology. You're putting out some really amazing liqueurs. And it also seems like the more things change, the more things stay the same in a lot of ways, because it sounds like you're one of the first women in that space too. So talk to us a little bit about that brand and sort of about your journey there and what that's been like for you.
Thanks. Well, so the Liquid Muse is my business, which is kind of an umbrella for, you know, all the different things I do. And so this whole organic mixology liqueurs, that came to be because around 2008, I was going around the country with a client of mine, which was Method Home Cleaning Products, of all random things, but teaching organic cocktail classes for this stylish, sustainable lifestyle, a campaign they were doing at the time. And so my own liqueurs partner, Jason Monkarsh, he wanted to start this organic liqueur. He heard I was teaching these organic cocktail classes all over the place. We got put in touch, and that's how Ohm was born. It's really interesting to be part of a brand, you know. It's a totally something I would never have started by myself, I'll just say. I'm very glad that Jason kind of came to me with this idea. And I think that he and I balance each other very well because, you know, I do have more experience in the mixology world. He came from more of a business, you know, different kinds of business background. And Our goal was to create an organic liqueur, which it is, the USDA certified organic. It is gluten-free, but of course anything distilled is.
And, not until Harold says it's gluten-free.
Exactly. We'll have him scan it.
Oh my God, I know. Please. Because if Harold detects anything, we need to go back and reformulate. But the thing that I feel really good about with Om Liqueurs is that our mission is very much about sustainability. You know, the one thing I've always been adamant about with my work in the Liquid Muse is really being authentic. You know, I don't try to go around and say I'm the best anything because I'm not. I'm a jack of all trades in a lot of ways. I'm pretty good at several things, but I don't ever consider myself the best at anything. But what I do with integrity and to the best of my ability. And that's how I feel about Om. I think that Om is, you know, our dark chocolate and sea salt liqueur is kind of our, you know, little breakout star of the four flavors that we have. It got a great write-up in the New York Times recently saying that it was, you know, the one to, that it's a keeper, you know, which like really made a big impact for a little brand like us. It starts with organic sugarcane-based distillate, sweetened with organic agave nectar. All of the essences and essential oils and flavorings and everything that's in there all passes USDA certified organic regulation. The flavors are very good, and I made a point when we were formulating to make sure that it wasn't too sweet. I personally, having also been a bartender, you know, never wanted to. I've worked with chocolate liqueurs, especially that can be a little bit corn syrupy. They have an artificial taste to them. They're creamy or they're too goopy and sweet, and I've never really liked that because when you use a liqueur that's too cloying and too sweet, it kills the drink and it's all you taste. And it makes it only a dessert cocktail. And what I love about, you know, what I'm proud of, I should say, with especially our dark chocolate and sea salt, is I think of it more as a flavoring tool. It's not overly sweet. It's not viscous. But it brings like cocoa, espresso, chocolate, a hint of sea salt. I've done cocktail pairing dinners. Like one I did, for example, Vail or Telluride, somewhere in Colorado, some fancy resort about 8 years ago. And I did basic and essentially a chocolate old fashioned that I paired with the chef's elk sirloin dish. And it worked.
Yeah.
It was so good. And the reason why it worked is because, and I don't eat meat anymore, FYI, I'm a big animal advocate. But at the time, you know, I thought it was just so awesome because the dark chocolate and sea salt gave a depth and richness to the old fashioned without it becoming a dessert drink. And so I think that that's one of the coolest things about Om as far as the product is concerned. And of course, we have a mission, which I can talk to you about our mission too.
Totally. But yeah, I think that's a big problem when it comes to, you know, your more quote unquote dessert flavors like chocolate, vanilla, cinnamon, is that, you know, those flavors actually work beautifully in more kind of savory, complex ways. But we just, you know, we've cupcakeified them so much as a society that let me ask you this. Is it a tough sell to say, here's a chocolate liqueur, but it's not, you can use it in stuff other than a Choco Teeny. Like it works really well with, you know, your more gamey, viscous meats. Do people go, oh, that sounds weird? Or do people go, thank God, it's about time?
Yes, the latter. I mean, that is literally one of my talking points. You know, like it's a chocolate liqueur, but it's not the chocolate liqueur you might be thinking it is, you know? And so that is absolutely a strong suit, I think, of our Om dark chocolate and sea salt liqueur for sure.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned the mission because Om doesn't just stand for organic mixology. It stands for oceans and mountains as well. Am I right about that?
Yeah. Well, so so the brand itself is organic mixology liqueurs, Om liqueurs. But, you know, so over the course of the Liquid Muse, you know, I do marketing and I do events and I've been, you know, hired by a lot of different companies to create, you know, spirited dinners at Tails and, you know, different kinds of events, you know, trade and consumer events. I love doing events. I have a festival here in Santa Fe, Cocktail and Culinary Festival, and Taco Wars, which is my big event I do normally every year. But, you know, because I oversee the marketing for Om, One of the things I really wanted to bring in was the oceans and mountains, which we were really launching this year, 2020. This is a newer initiative. We have been doing other things that are environmentally friendly. For example, since the beginning, we donate a percentage of the bottle sales to Trees for the Future, which is a really wonderful organization that plants trees in places like Haiti or different parts of Africa where hurricanes or drought or whatever have affected trees in that area. And, you know, so that's a really wonderful organization. This year, 2020, we're donating $1 for all bottles sold throughout the year to the USBG Bartender Relief Fund. You know, we've always been very devoted to, again, that authenticity I was talking about. So through OHM, you know, part of our mission really is to try to give back to the bar community and also to the environment. As I mentioned, I'm a huge animal person. So with my events, Taco Wars and my New Mexico Cocktail and Culinary Festival, I raise money for the Santa Fe Animal Shelter through those events. I really feel that, you know, when we are entrepreneurs, we have an opportunity to kind of craft a vehicle to be of service. And of course, you're both hospitality people. You know, we know that hospitality means to be of service to the people in front of us, the guests in our venues. But I feel, and in addition to that, I feel that as a small business owner, I also have an opportunity to be of service to my community, whether it's raising money for my animal shelter in Santa Fe, through the Liquid Muse events, whether it's through OHM Liqueurs and we can give back to the environment because we are an organic liqueur, that's very important to us. You know, that all of that ties together to me to have some kind of meaning, you know, behind doing work.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like, you know, it's an obligation we have to extend our hospitality to the community that we're in, right? They've hosted us and given us space to do what we do. It seems obligatory to me to give back. And my bars, we've always made efforts to give back as well. I want to talk to you a little bit about, if we can, I don't want to veer too much off the topics you want to talk about, but New Mexico Cocktails and Culture Culinary Festival, it's a mouthful. you know, Natalie, I just opened the new phase of Amore Margo, which is a tasting room. It's an event where we do paired cocktails that are Amaro focused with vegan fare. So it seems to align with everything you do. Well, we saw that it was an opportunity to have, you know, what are Amari? They're botanical, vegetal, herbal, and what is vegan food? Well, it's all that stuff too. It seems like a natural fit, right? And we've been knocking it out of the park. So I'd love to maybe come down and participate in that when it's safe to do so.
I was just going to ask you, will you please come talk about that at the festival when we can gather again?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd love to come down and talk, and I'd love to come and bring, you know, we hired a chef. His name is Alec Gross. He was the former sous chef for ABCV, which is the, you know, the vegetarian restaurant here that's well-known in New York City. You know, I just said, look, I'm going to turn the dial up a notch and make you vegan. You know, you're not just going to be vegetarian in here. So he's been just really, I don't know, what a great time we've been having tasting cocktails up against the foods that he's making pairings out of it that makes sense. And so far, I mean, granted, we've opened 2 weeks now and during COVID, so we're only serving maximum 16 people a night. So the return of input isn't too high yet, but the data that we're getting back is that people are charmed by it, overwhelmingly happy with the notion. So we're having a great time. I'd love to come down, and yes, I would be happy to give a talk and then a demo or a dinner or however it works. I don't know, but I'm very interested.
All of the above. And, you know, and I can't wait to come and see your new space too. And I love that you're doing that. I was, you know, seeing on social media that you're expanding. I'm like, yeah, wow, you know, that is super impressive. And
not hard to expand. Not hard to expand when your original space is only 240 square feet.
right. But still, yeah. I love that. It's really a leap of hope. I think that when we're in a crazy situation like now and you keep looking toward the future and opening new things and moving toward the future, you know, that not only gives hope for our own selves, but for each other. So I love that you did that.
Well, thank you. And I'd love to have you come and see it and see it in person and show you how
can't wait.
How frankly beautiful it is and how, you know, excited I am to serve these dishes alongside of my drinks. It's been really great for me, because I don't know if you knew this, but I was a chef for 12 years also. So a lot of collaboration going on between front and back, and it's been, first of all, certainly a challenge, but it's also been really invigorating, I guess. Like during this sort of time that's been pretty downtrodden, it's been something to grip onto and get some energy from. So anyhow,
yes.
Enough about me. Let's get back to you. Let's get back to Ohm Spirits. We're talking a lot today about the chocolate one, but you've got a couple other flavors too, right?
We do. We launched our vanilla and rose a couple of years ago, which I've been wanting to do more floral. And of course, floral is always tricky because you don't want it to get soapy and perfumey. I think that the sort of creaminess of a vanilla flavor with the light floral of a rose just works really beautifully together. So obviously it's great for, you know, champagne cocktails, for Valentine's Day, for Mother's Day, for summer weddings, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that's a really fun one. We also have our coconut and lychee, and we have our Meyer lemon and ginger. All of the flavors that we have are two notes. And I think, you know, our pivot has been to really look toward the consumer. Obviously, you know, we're a very small brand, right? And so every bottle sale counts for Ohm. And prior to the pandemic, we had just signed with Vision, who was rolling us out into like 30 new markets this year. And so we were like, wow, this is our year. We're going from like being in, you know, eight states to like 30 states. And I was so excited. And, you know, we'd been really building the brand on premise, mainly like Las Vegas, Nevada, and New York City were our two biggest markets. And we're really working on building LA. Obviously, that all went, and so what we did was we took a moment, took a deep breath, and I went back to my personal roots, the Liquid Muse roots, which was blogging about cocktails to consumers. I was speaking always, consumers have always been the Liquid Muse audience, more so than bartenders, because I learn from bartenders and I share it with the Liquid Muse consumers. So we went back to, I said to Jason, my partner, I'm like, well, you know what we have to do now is, you know, right now the bartenders aren't working, the bars are closed. We need to be talking to the consumers. And so we did a whole new website. We added the ability for people at home to order online. We have a couple of ambassadors who are creating these lovely how-to cocktail videos and just creating really love. We have Claire Mallett in LA and Angela Clary, who lives here in Santa Fe also. And they're just these really talented women. We have, at this point, you know, we've always had female ambassadors. We're not trying to leave men out, but I really do like to give a chance to more women, because I know that over the years, I've often felt looked over for, you know, different opportunities, because I did feel that there was a lot of, like, you know, it tails, you know, this kind of guy camaraderie of let's get wasted and go hit the strip clubs together. And the next thing, you know, the guy who was there, like, got this cool gig. And I'm not taking away from anyone, you know, who's had their cool gigs. But I kind of feel like, you know, there were a lot of times where females didn't have as much of that chance to sort of buddy up and get to know people who held the keys to the opportunities. And so so I really do like having, you know, kind of focusing on female ambassadors. And also these women are wicked talented and do beautiful photography and beautiful videos and just are very authentic, kind, lovely people. And I hope to add a couple more before the end of the year.
I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think people always say, you know, you responsibly use your platform, and I think you have a platform and you're responsibly using it. So if you're interested in any recommendations, I have some people in my pocket that I could recommend that would help you out here in New York City and be interested in dealing with these products.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. So what is the website to get to Ohm delivery, so that our listeners will know?
Just organicmixology.com. is the OHM website. TheLiquidMuse.com is my website, which also has, you know, a path to OHM. But OrganicMixology.com is our website. And then our Instagram was Organic Mixology, but it got hacked. And so it's like really weird. So we had to start a new one after like weeks of trying to figure it out. So our Instagram is OHM Dark Chocolate on Instagram. We're going to be rolling out a new product, actually, you know, kind of like you, Souther, innovating during this lull, if you will. We're rolling out a new product, which I think I can talk about. It's going to be, and if not, well, then I think I'm going to beg forgiveness to my own partner rather than ask permission, because I'm really excited about it.
That's how I do. That's how I operate half my life. I think that's my mantra.
Right.
It's just simpler this way.
Exactly. But we are going to be launching an OHM dark chocolate cold brew can very soon. A lot of people. Yeah, it's so good.
Dark chocolate cold brew. And that's the dark chocolate and sea salt, right?
Yeah, the dark chocolate and sea salt mixed with
a little salt in your coffee. Brew. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds
dope. I'm telling
you,
it is so good. And it's low ABV, you know, it's not crazy strong, and they're super duper duper delicious. And so again, you know, while we're thinking about consumers and people wanting to have convenience and buy something at the store that they don't necessarily have to mix up themselves, you know, that's our new product that's coming out pretty soon.
Oh, I mean, believe me, bottle cocktail sales are, since we opened the store, it's easily, hands down, no questions asked, it's our number one selling item. We have six varieties that are just racked up in the case, and if time allows, we can do custom ones as well, and we offer them in a range of sizes from 100 milliliters all the way up to a liter, and they are difficult to keep stocked. So, you know, that's what the consumer's looking for right now. And, you know, you mentioned earlier, like, you've turned your focus back to the consumer, or maybe you just refocused on them. You know, like I mentioned off air, I think I got myself involved in a Facebook group that's suddenly chosen my book to sort of be their Bible. And there's about 10,000 people in that group. And I have sold so many books during this time. And also my book in general, I didn't write it for necessarily for bartenders. There's certainly, I always say my book's third. It's a third nerdy information to keep the bartenders happy, but not so much that it bores everybody else. There's a third sort of anecdotal stuff in there, just me telling stories, and then there's a third recipes. And that the goal is to definitely target the consumer, because targeting our industry is limiting yourself to a smaller pool.
That's right. That's right. And, you know, even when we show up in a hospitality job, I mean, we're there to serve the consumer, right? It's not just about us patting each other on the back all the time within the mixology world, which is, you know, it's fine. It's great to celebrate each other. But I think that it is great for us all to kind of, you know, keep remembering, you know, that the consumer is like, you know, who we show up to serve whenever we do whatever it is we do, you know.
Without them, we're literally nothing.
Well, exactly.
just a bunch of nerds that are probably drinking too much. You know?
Guilty.
I agree with everything except probably.
Yeah, it's definitely. It's definitely. So talk a little bit more about how you disseminate a lot of your money's towards charities. I'm always interested in that. As you probably know, I used to have a bar called Coup where we donated 100% of our profits to charities that were being defunded or threatened by the government. Looks like you're more animal driven. Maybe I'm just flipping through stuff here.
Well, I personally am more animal driven. So with under the Liquid Muse, I have Taco Wars, which is my big event, which is the opening party for my festival.
Now, how is this? Two of the things under Liquid Muse are food.
Yeah. Well, so you know that. So that's one thing that over the course of time, now I'm speaking purely about the Liquid Muse here. You know, I obviously am still involved with OHM, which is, you know, under my umbrella, but I've always been as much about food as cocktails, my personal self. You know, the cocktails took the spotlight with regard to all the work I was doing, you know, because people were paying me to talk about that. No one was paying me to talk about food. But you know, I always, you know, whenever I'm teaching classes to consumers, I'm always talking about thinking of mixology as the liquid element of the culinary world to help them, you know, sort of like put it into context why we're mixing things and balancing and training and learning and all that to help them relate. You know, it's not just like throw a bunch of stuff in a glass. I mean, I'm preaching to the choir when I'm saying this to you guys, but you know, that's what I talk about.
We're pretty simpatico. I always, I think my Twitter handle, the little sentence there just says, I used to cook food and now I just make chilled soup.
Yeah. That's funny. I don't think I noticed the chilled soup part. And so, you know, I'm like such a chef groupie, you know, I respect mixologists, but I'm not a groupie for mixologists. I'm a groupie for chefs. I am just like, you know, more than celebrity actors or anything. So yes, very much a lot of what I do is about food. Taco Wars is my most successful event of the year. And I'm just, you know, really sad because this year I was going to expand it to Las Vegas and next year I was going to expand it to Los Angeles. And Taco Wars is my big breakout of my events and obviously very food driven, although we do have cocktails equally involved with Taco Wars. I'm just rambling on now. Oh, but my back to your question, which was from my events, from my festival and Taco Wars, I take 20% off the gross sales. So that's pre-tax off the gross sales. And I donate that directly to the animal shelter, which, you know, I can't donate all the profit because it's a freaking expensive event to do. But I just take 20% right off the gross sales, not even profit sales, just gross, and give it to the animal shelter. With OHM, what we do is that's broken down more to, like, for example, I said for 2020, we're giving the USBG Bartender Relief Fund $1 per bottle sold throughout 2020. Now our sales are down, so it's not as, you know, the millions we would love it to be, but you know, but it's something, you know, that we can do as a company. And then with Trees for the Future, Jason, who is my partner in OHM, he's more the money guy, you know, I'm more like the marketing person, and I'm not overly involved with that, but I say that to say I don't know what the actual number is, like dollar wise, I know that it breaks down to almost $1 per bottle. Also that he donates to Trees for the Future every year. Just like writes them a check, you know, for that.
Right.
So let me just ask, what exactly is Taco Wars? Because I'm picturing something somewhere between the Great British Bake Off and the food fight scene from Animal House. Like, is it what? What actually is it? Because I'm very intrigued by all these possibilities.
Oh, God, yes. So Taco Wars is my most fun thing. So it's basically it's a taco competition. So I started it here in Santa Fe, again, as the opening party for New Mexico Cocktail and Culinary Festival. So I have usually like, I mean, we're a small town, so like we have like 25, you know, chefs that participate. They each do their own like signature, like they create a taco for the event. So I have Italian restaurants involved, Greek restaurants, Asian restaurants. So everyone's doing these like chicken parm taco or like, all these random, you know, like things. And it sells out like super fast every year. And then there are all these different liquor brands, because of course my whole festival is about mixology too. So all these different liquor brands have their cocktail that they're featuring. And then people come to the event, they buy one ticket, they get to taste and sample every drink and every taco. Very few people can eat through all the tacos, but you know, they certainly try.
Challenge accepted.
Oh my God. It's so much fun. I always have live music. People are, it's crazy. Like, again, I was just so happy that I'm happy it's so successful because I didn't know, you know, you never know if it will be or not. Some things I try just totally flop and no one cares. But this one, people are like they're emailing me. Like the governor, when she, we have this awesome governor, Michelle Lujan Grisham, who is a Democrat and a very strong woman, and I love her to bits. And so when she was running for governor, her office was calling me because Taco Wars was sold out. And they called me like, do you think we could get some tickets? Could you squeeze her in? I was like, oh my God, yes. You know, so it's just really like, it's so much fun. And so I really hope you guys come. And then as I do, I just got the federal trademark for Taco Wars. So as I expand it throughout the country, you know, you're welcome to come, be involved, whatever.
Chat, like Souther said, challenge accepted.
Yeah, once again, I'd love to come and be involved in that one too. Jeez.
Oh my God. You'd be great at it. You'd be so great in it.
Yeah, let's get it on. Wow, another episode has whizzed by with the very charming Natalie Bovis. Natalie, anyone wants to get in touch with you or Ohm or the Liquid Muse, where do we look?
TheLiquidMuse.com is kind of a catch-all for anything I talked about. But also OrganicMixology.com is where you're going to find the liqueurs. But, you know, either way.
Yeah. You got a Instagram too, or?
Oh, yes. Yeah, so at the Liquid Muse or at Ohm Dark Chocolate.
Great. I feel like in the beginning we would do this and people would give out their emails and then it was just their Twitter. Then it was just their Twitter. Then it was just their website. And now it's frankly, everybody just goes to Instagram. That's kind of the only thing that seems to matter.
Yeah, Instagram's the most fun. On Facebook, I have a group. It's a private group. But people can ask to be, you know, accepted and we'll accept them. But it's the Liquid Muse Cocktail and Culinary Club Facebook group. So if anyone wants to join that, you know, I would love for you guys to come and share some recipes with people and talk about your stuff and your podcast. You know, you're very welcome to post about it.
Absolutely.
And I got to be honest, this week I've been making a lot of reposado margaritas with the chocolate and sea salt, which is...
Oh, good.
I love repo and chocolate, man. It's one of these, I love it because it's one of these combinations that doesn't make logical sense, but just works so beautifully well. So yeah, absolutely.
I think I basically just
gave the recipe. That's pretty much what it is. But yeah, trust me, you won't regret it.
I love it. Thank you.
Outstanding. So Natalie, so thankful for your time today, for being on the show. And that's it for this week's episode of The Speakeasy. Be sure to tune into Heritage Radio Network for more shows and content just like this. If you've got the time, go up to the Beating Heart on our website and donate some money or become a member. That's what funds all these shows and keeps us on the air creating this content for you to listen to. And hanging out in the studio or the virtual studio is one of the joys of my week every week. It's something I do just to recharge my own battery. And certainly this episode has done that. So once again, thanks so much to Natalie Bovis from Liquid Muse and Ohm Spirits. Thanks to Greg for being here with me as always. And I appreciate it all. So cheers, everybody.
Cheers, brother.
Cheers. Thanks, guys. So you don't
shun the devil with your rock. Want more of The Speakeasy? Follow us and ask questions on Instagram at Speakeasy Podcast or on Twitter at Speakeasy Radio. You can find Damon at Damon Bolte and you can find me at Creative Drunk on all platforms. Take a moment to write us a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite platform and give us a star rating, 5 if possible. If you're visiting New York City or a resident, stop by the studio and hang out with us during an episode. Reach out beforehand to make sure we'll be here. We'd love to see you. And please support our show by visiting heritageradionetwork.org and clicking on the Beating Heart to donate.
The Stone Barn Center for Food and Agriculture will be hosting their annual Young Farmers and Cooks Conference virtually this year on December 8th through 10th. Programming will cover topics like mutual aid, regional grain economies, land management practices, and much, much more. Whether you're a farmer, cook, butcher, miller, preservationist, processor, or anyone else in the food chain, this conference is for you. Learn more at stonebarncenter.org/YFCC.